Hey, welcome to the Mead House, and thanks for listening to episode 222. I'm your host, Jeff, and Mead House Nation, I need to say a profound thank you. I know I was away for a long time, not releasing for quite a while, and the outpouring of support that I've gotten over the last couple episodes we've released has been huge. I'm so ridiculously grateful to all of you that have reached out just to say you're enjoying new content and glad to see we're taking some fun directions with the show. Thank you guys. Thank you for your kind words. And it makes me happy that we have such a dedicated audience that is willing to reach out and say, welcome back. Hey, you're listening to the Mead House podcast. We are all over the place. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher Radio, on Spotify, iHeartRadio, YouTube, Amazon Music. There is a whole list over on our website, www.themeadhouse.com. Check it out. In this episode, we are taking a little bit of a break from interviewing some of our winners from the Iron Bee 2021 to talk to homebrewer Carlos Herrera. He was one of the many folks that have been kind enough to shoot me a message and say, hey, thank you for releasing more episodes. Would love to be involved. And so, yeah, he has been a homebrewer for a number of years. He has a YouTube channel that is producing some new content here soon, he says. And he's looking at starting his own meadery. So we have a wide range of topics to talk about. Hey, before we get into that, I do need to say thank you to our key holders. These guys are doing their part and keeping the Mead House podcast free. You too can also join up for as little as $2 a month. You'll get some cool rewards, some key holder only content. You just need to search the Mead House over at patreon.com or click the link in the show notes. So we are coming to the what are we drinking tonight section of the episode. In front of me, I have two glasses, and for a change, both of them are meads. This one is a professional mead. This is from Sap House. This is a raspberry, hibiscus, and rose hips experiment 2004. Weather today was hot. It was like 95 degrees. I was looking through my stuff and found a couple tart meads that just sounded like they would be really hitting the spot tonight. And this one, it's a beautiful ruby red color. There's a lot of hibiscus and a little bit of raspberry on the nose. And the hibiscus and raspberry are kind of right together there, right up front and on the mid palate. And it kind of fades into a little bit of a citrusy bite right at the very end that is simultaneously crisp and kind of also tart and sour. I'm pretty sure that's the rose hips coming through there at the end. That is a really, really nice drink for a hot day. Just nice, refreshing, has a little bit of a citrusy bite and a lot of fruit flavor packed into it. I'm really pleased with that. The other one is not a professional. This was actually gifted to me by my former co-host, Ryan. He gave me a bunch of our Iron Bee extras, and he also gave me a number of his. This one is listed as a lemon palm hydromel. It is very, very carbonated, as I know Ryan likes to do, and I like that as well. It is a little hazy, but it's got a very, like, light gold straw color to it, very clear, lots of bubbles coming up. Yeah, there's some lemon and some kind of berry fruitiness on the nose. And compared to the Sap House, this one is very dry. Again, this is a Ryan meat, so that's not surprising at all. Lemon is very pleasant there. It's also ending very, very crisply. Now, I like this one a lot. I think both of these have been excellent choices for tonight. So, without further ado, my guest tonight is Carlos Herrera. Carlos, what is in your glass?
Well, sticking with the traditional Mead House tradition, I have two glasses in front of me as well. One of them, both are my personal brews. The first one is a Chilean Malbec Piment made with avocado blossom and then double oaked. First oak edition was Hungarian, and then after 6 weeks, I added some medium toast American. You get the Malbec that comes right off of it. The American oak comes in right behind the Malbec. Don't get a whole lot of honey character in the aroma, but the taste is you get the Malbec, you get the avocado blossom that comes up behind it, and then the oak follows it very closely behind as it goes down. It's just amazing.
I love a Malbec and I love an avocado blossom honey. That sounds like a winner right there. I tell you what.
Oh, and so I'm actually getting ready to bottle this. It's still sitting in the carboy. It's been probably 4 or 5 months now since I've started it. And so it's ready to go into a bottle, and then hopefully I'll be sending these off to competition soon.
Nice.
And then in my second glass, it is a second rendition of one of my other meads that I won second place in Donruss Cup experimental. It is a Oak O'Shea Acer Glen. This one, it's a second rendition, so this one I soaked the oak, and some people are probably going to get mad about it. I soaked the oak in Johnny Walker Blue Label Scotch for two weeks, and then once the mead finished fermenting, let it clear out, then I added the oak into it with some vanilla, and you get right off the nose, you get a nice, it's like a mix between molasses and brown sugar. You get the oak that comes through with a little peat that follows it from the scotch. Mm-hmm. You get the maple, and just go, and it's a semi-sweet. The Malbec is dry, man. But yeah, you get the caramelized honey, you get the brown sugar, you get the maple syrup that comes in behind it. The vanilla is very subtle, kind of rounds everything out. And then on the exhale, that's where you get the peat from the scotch that comes through. And I'm open to send this one to competition too, and hopefully. Just because I changed just a little bit about it, hopefully I'll be able to go from second place to hopefully first place, or even potentially advance further for the best of show.
There you go. Yeah, that sounds delightful as well.
Yeah.
So, you mentioned a couple that you are hoping to get into competitions here. Let's talk about mead competitions for a little bit. It's been a minute, and of course we've been talking about the Iron Bee, so it wouldn't hurt to talk about something a little bit more standard. How many of the meads you make are you kind of aiming for, competition versus like just your own consumption at home?
Everything I make is for my own consumption. I try to, like everybody, try to make it as best as I can. Mm-hmm. But I brew everything to my personal taste and then send it to competition just to kind of get feedback from somebody else besides my close friends who like free alcohol or I have a couple friends that in my homebrew club that'll give honest feedback, and all of them will say, oh, I didn't like this, or I like that, maybe add this, take away that. So, but other than that, for the most part, it's all to my own personal taste, and I send it to competitions. And fortunately, I've been lucky enough that most of my meads that I send have scored very well. On average, I'm between 38 and 44. So I've had a couple. One was like a 32. The other one was a 36. But those ones I knew weren't going to do so well. But other than that, it's all a personal taste.
Okay, I'll buy that. Yeah. So let's see. You have a YouTube channel we were talking a little bit about on before we got the camera from the camera before we got the recorder going. The audience here can find you as, is it Texas Longhouse Mead?
Yes.
Okay. And let's see. I went back and glanced at a couple of your videos here, some of your more recent ones. Beforehand, you've got quite a bit of content there as far as, you know, starter meads and some mead projects you worked on with some members of the community. You also mentioned you've got a couple new videos coming out. Do you want to tell us what those new projects are going to look like?
One of them that I'm working on right now is a peach mead. I haven't seen a whole lot of peach meads on YouTube, so I figured, and last year I made it for our homebrew club. They put on daily membership at a barbecue competition, and so we distribute our local homebrews, and everybody really seemed to love the peach mead, and so that's going to be a video. Another one I'm doing is a lemon drop hopped lemon mead.
Very nice.
Yeah, I keep about 10 gallons of that on hand at all times I'm down to 5 gallons because we floated one for 4th of July weekend, but when everybody comes over and just starts pulling on tap handles, it's time to start brewing again.
That happens.
Yeah, especially when it's free. And then another one, because I also like doing experiments too. That's kind of where I wanted my channel to go, because I have that banana, tested bananas 3 separate ways to see which gave the best flavor. So I'm going to redo my official recommendation for bananas, and then I'm doing a video because a lot of people have been asking about tea corks recently, and a lot of people are pushing back on it, saying, you know, tea corks are only good for short periods of time, but I see a lot of meaderies actually switching to tea corks. Yes, you know, they're expected to turn over a lot quicker, but sometimes when you go to a distributor, they're held onto for a little bit. So I'm doing an experiment where one is going to go into a beer bottle, one's going into a wine bottle and get corked, and then the third one will go into a reused bottle, but I'm going to buy fresh tea corks and cork it, let them sit for about 6 months, 8 months, and then have a couple people from the community come in. I'll send them a box, one of each, and then see if there's any noticeable difference between each of them. So that way we can
make a suggestion there.
Put it to the test or kind of squash it, but see if tea corks are actually as bad as people believe they are, because they're not quite as tight fitting, if that makes sense.
I totally follow where you're coming from there. One suggestion that I would throw your way, include a fourth condition, another reused bottle with a fresh tea cork. But if you can get like a shrink wrap or a cellophane wrapper on it, I've seen a lot of bottles at the liquor store that have the tea cork and then something that kind of seals it in place. I wonder if that would make a difference at all. I know a lot of the experimental bottle that I'm drinking tonight from Sap House came that way, with, you know, tea cork on top and then a plastic ring shrunk wrapped on it with a little perforation you can rip open. So I wonder if that additional barrier of plastic kind of around the tea cork fitting would do anything to preserve freshness while it's sitting on a distributor shelf, you know?
Yeah. And I definitely have a lot of foil wraps, that shrink wraps that I can use to. So I can definitely do that. I haven't started that one yet. I'm trying to find the mead that I want to, you know, stick in there that will have like noticeable difference. Like, I think the small bit might have noticeable difference, but, you know, then again, you know, it is a red wine, so a little oxidization might help it. So, you know, just trying to find the right mead that would work for.
Yeah. My instinct says to go with something either really fruity or like really grainy, either for that, you know, like the oxidization, that kind of a sherry note, or else kind of the wet cardboard you get with a lot of grainy beery stuff. Yeah. Either of those seems like it would be, you know, a good way to tell there. But hey, let's circle back to that peach mead you were talking about too. Peaches, we've talked about this on the show. They have a tendency to be, well, there's a lot of water in the fruit as opposed to the flavor compounds and things like that. And so it can be a little troublesome getting a really good peach flavor. How did you approach your peach mead?
So with the peach mead, for this iteration that I'm redoing, it's 22 pounds of peaches in 5 gallons. Mm-hmm. But my first round, I did 7 peaches, the one everybody loved, was 7 peaches in primary, or 7 pounds of peaches in primary in 5 gallons, and it was hot fermented with Kvike at 95. Okay. Kvike Voss. Fermented at 95, was done in 36 hours. and then took the rack, let it sit for a week, racked it off of that, and then threw an additional 15 pounds of peaches into the 5 gallons and let that sit for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then pulled it out. It was a 7% mead. Okay. Pulled it out and let it clear, and it cleared out beautifully. Like a week after I pulled all the peaches out. So
nice.
And then let it sit for a little bit, threw it into keg, carved it up, and sent it out.
How pronounced was the peach flavor you got off of that? You're talking about, you said 22 pounds of peaches between, your primary and your secondary there. Was it a large peach flavor? Was it a little more subtle? How did it come out for you?
It was, you stuck your nose in it and it smelled like you were like bit into a fresh peach and smelled it. And it's just very aromatic. That's exactly what it smelled like. And the peach was very forward because I used orange blossom honey. And then once it finished with the 15 pounds, the gravity was up to like 10, 12. Mm-hmm. And then I back sweetened it to 1025. So it was a very sweet, well-rounded, like a sweet Georgia peach in the middle of summer.
Very nice. Very nice. I bet that was delightful.
Yeah. 5 gallons was gone in 3 days.
Almost as fast as it fermented, huh?
Yes.
Let's see. And I know when we were talking, setting this up, you also mentioned you're going to be judging for, I think, the Mead Stampede you mentioned. Is that this weekend coming up, or it's fairly soon, is it not?
Yes, it is this weekend. What's today, Tuesday? I actually leave here Thursday to drive up to Oklahoma to be a guest judge for Mead Stampede. And I went through not the whole process. I just finished the written test, mm-hmm, for my BJCP Mead certification. And then now I'm just trying to find a testing date. And I think it was you that suggested the Mazer or Valkyrie score.
Yeah.
So I have to look into that.
Yeah, I know either of those competitions would also be happy to have you as a judge as well. It's still a little early to say. I've just kind of volunteered or been invited to both, but there's a very good chance I'll be judging on both of those events. Kind of, it looks like it's one right after the other this year. So to anybody in our listener land that's going to be at either of those events, feel free to say hi. Yeah, they are both huge events, and I know I want to say both of them have a judging tasting event right beforehand to help get new judges through the door and get their mead certifications and stuff. So, I would see if the organizers of either of those have a spot available. So.
Definitely have to check it. It's right after my birthday, so it'd be a good birthday present.
There you go. So how hard did you find the written part of the exam there?
The written part, it was like it. I used every second except for like the last 30 seconds. So, you know, it's 200 questions, 60 minutes, and I was 59 minutes and 30 seconds to finish the test. And it was definitely a wake-up call because, you know, I've been brewing for 6 years. I've experimented with a lot of different honeys, a lot of different fruits, spices, and stuff like that. And there were just some things that, like, I just didn't pick up on or notice. And so, you know, I went through the study guide and was kind of reading the, you know, the special ingredients list and, you know, the descriptors, stuff like that. But, and there's also honeys, a lot of honeys, well, I won't say a lot of honeys. There's quite a few honeys that I haven't used, like heather, palmetto, and some other ones. And they, like, that was the majority of the test was, what does this taste like? What does this smell like? And I'm like, oh my God, I'm drawing blanks now. You know, and it says on the test that, you know, you can use, it's an open source test, but if you go through and try to look at every question and open source it, you're not going to make it.
No. My experience with the written exam was very similar. I think I had maybe a minute and a half left for all of it. And no, I went into that with the understanding that, yes, I can look at stuff if I get stuck or, you know, I don't know the answer. But I know I need to have that, like, an organized approach to it in the first place and have most of it kind of committed to memory in the second place. Yeah, no, it is tough, but I also feel like it was a good growth experience for me, just being able to kind of digest and think about that much information. And, you know, I cannot say enough good things about the BJCP meat judging program and how useful I think it is for a home meat maker to be able to pick that up and really get a good handle on being able to evaluate not only your own meats but other people's meats and kind of being able to pick apart those little flavors and nuances. It's very valuable to a home meat maker if they want to increase their craft.
And, like, another thing that I use to help kind of work up, like, I buy ridiculous amounts of meats. You know, my wife says I either got to brew it or buy it. Can't do both. Well, I find a way to do both. And so just because I'm trying to experience,
yeah,
you know, different regions, different profiles. You know, everybody has different, you know, like the biases that everyone says, you know, I've bought a lot of Schramm's meat. I bought a lot from Brimminghorn, Lost Cause, Superstition. I got a local meatery here, Breaking Brew. Went to Texas Meat Fest this past year. That was amazing. So I try to experience a lot of meats, and so I pick up a lot of different little things. But one thing that really kind of helped me, especially trying to working towards that tasting, was how to become a better judge. I forgot who put it on, but it's on YouTube. And, you know, Carvin Wilson's on there, Ken Schramm, I want to say Burr Brothers on there. And so Pete's on there as well. And so just certain things that I wouldn't expect, you know, aerating when you're tasting, and, you know, different ways to try to pick up different notes. And so that helped me as well when I was trying to, as I'm still working to finish this up.
Yeah, I've seen that video series as well. And for the life of me, I can't remember who was putting that out either. If I really have my druthers, by the time I get this edited, I'll try to include that in the show notes for our listeners here. And in addition to your whole journey as a home meat maker, we were also talking about you're getting ready to, well, you're in the planning phases, I guess, for starting your own meatery. What got you to the point where you said, this is what I want to do for a full-time job? How did you make that decision?
Well, I actually got to blame my work for it. I got hurt on the job and been home since, was it August of 2019? I've had 3 back surgeries now. And so I've been laid up. And then, and so for like the last 3 years, that's all I've done is just mass produce home mead. You know, I got 2 15-gallon fermenters now. I've got a whole pump system for it. Again, yeah, I buy my honey by the bucket, and you know, just the homebrew club was a big help as well. You know, taking it out, and everyone's like, dude, you need a, you know, you're not working anymore. You need to do this. I'm like, I don't know. You know, I've never had my own business before. I don't know anything about running a business. But I was like, dude, well, there's a will, there's a way. So slowly but surely, I've been trying to, you know, take small business classes here and there. Took a business plan class to try to write up a business plan. Took it to Mead Fest, Texas Mead Fest, and there's, you know, of course you have the commercial meters that are there, and then we had a little table set up between everybody, you know, and I met a lot of great people there too. Tracy Kufish, she's been a big help recently. I sent her meads, so I won't say on the regular, but I sent her a lot of meads. I sent her home with some, but even then they're like, this is really good. This is really good. People were there like, hey, where can I buy this? I'm like, I'm just a home brewer. Like I can't sell it. And I was like, here, but you can have more. And just, you know, took a whole box of homebrew with me and just let people try it. Cause you know, trying not to get exposure, but trying to get the feedback from the general people who don't know me. Hey, is this good? Is this good? Can I buy it? No, you can't, but you can have more. Here you go.
A second best answer you can give somebody. Yes.
Yeah, pretty much. So, but, and then, you know, now it's just a matter of waiting for the money. And my wife, she's 100% behind it now. And she's like, well, if you want to do this, let's do it. So, yeah, it's still in the planning phase. But once I get all the money together, it's going to be a little bit more than planning. So
there you go. So let's see. You were talking, I think, before we got started that right now in your planning phase, you're kind of working on a lineup for the meads that you want to produce. What kind of stuff can we expect on the lineup there?
It kind of a little bit of everything. A little bit. I wish I could do Bragg-Tism meter here in Texas, but unfortunately we can't.
That's most of the United States. Yes.
Yeah. But I have like a mixed berry that's 7% that's carbonated. Then I also have the same mixed berry, but at 14%, and it's aged on oak, has cinnamon and vanilla added to it. Then I have a mango habanero. That one scored really well at competitions before. I got a 44 on that one.
Nice.
And that one disappeared really quick too. You know, in Texas, you know, people down here like a little bit of spice. I know trying to sell, you know, domestically in the U.S., it might not sell, but I, you know, I can have it in the tap room because people here in Texas will drink it. My lemon drop hop lemon mead. I need to figure out how to make it again. But it was a tart cherry lemonade with hibiscus that was dry hopped with, it was an experimental hops, HBC 586.
Okay. Yeah.
That one, I had 5 gallons of that. That I just kind of, it was left over from my lemon drop mead, and it was left over from a tart cherry mead that I have here as well. And so I've kind of put them together, and I was like, hey, you know, let's see what hops taste like with it. And people actually went crazy for it. That one disappeared relatively quick too. That one was about a week versus the other ones, you know, 3-4 days. but yeah, that tart cherry lemonade, it was the tart cherry lemonade, but it has hibiscus and hops in it. Yeah, that one was really good. Then, of course, my and, you know, everyone's got to have a sizer, I think.
Sure, so of course.
I have a sizer, just like everybody else, cinnamon, vanilla, nutmeg. Then I also have just a dry sizer with nothing added to it that I carbonate. And then, of course, the small bag to kind of get the wine drinkers in. And then I think this Scotch Oaked Oshayesha blend would be good as well. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Oh, it sounds like you've got a good variety there. I will be very curious to see, you know, what we can get a taste of once you get the ball rolling on that, the meadery there.
Well, I have a lot of other things I want to do, but yeah. Just comes with time and what everybody's feedback on if it would be a good me to have one or not.
Absolutely. So besides, you know, the tasting exam and the videos coming out on your podcast there, what's next for you? What are you working on for the future?
Just doing the judging this week, and then doing a collaboration with other YouTubers, the Great Mead Project. It's myself and I want to say it's like 8 other YouTubers, nice. Brewers. Last year, everybody kind of put it together. The brewers kind of put together a list of things we wanted to do. And so last year it was mangoes, wallflower, clover honey, peppers, and corn. So the corn was tricky, but I got it in there. It was, you know, it worked. It was basically like a chicha, but with honey and not chewed and spit into that. And then, so this year we got together and we're like, hey, let's do this again, but this time let's let the community pick our ingredients. So each brewer came together. We picked two ingredients that we wanted to have to the list and then let the community brew or choose. And so the top three ingredients that we have to brew with are rose, vanilla, and lavender. So, and I'm still trying to piece together how I want to incorporate the lavender. Like I have lavender flower here, and I'm using for the rose, I'm using rose hips. Uh-huh. And I just picked up some honey from Savannah Bee Company, some lavender honey. So,
oh, nice.
But I also want to incorporate lavender flower, but I think I want it to be like a subtle note versus a main note. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. But other than that, that's pretty much all I have planned right now.
Right on, right on. So the usual final question that we like to ask, I feel like this is a useful one for those of the listeners that are getting started or just kind of trying to up their game. What do you think was your biggest like aha moment or learning moment, the one that really made you go, oh, yeah, this, where's that value point for you?
That's, you know, you get the usual answers, you know, nutrients or rehydrate or, you know, something along those lines. For me, the aha moment where I kind of started picking up a lot of steam was trying a bunch of different meads and then find a mead that is bad and try to figure out why it's bad so you can learn from that. And that's a hard thing to try to teach somebody, you know, why is this bad? I don't know. Yeah. Why is it bad? And so don't be afraid to try something, even if it fails. Honey is expensive, yes, but the best way you can learn is by failing and keep going and learning from your mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the idea of trying to figure out why something is bad is good advice. Even for, you know, those of us that are fairly new at this and may not have like the vocabulary or the understanding to go, oh, well, there's acetaldehyde or something in here and blah, 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 blah. You can still go, oh, well, this has a funny taste to it. It kind of reminds me of nail polish remover or something along those lines. You know, you can try and suss it out, and you can try and I think that's a good way to get started on that that path. Yeah, I agree with that notion 100%.
If something's bad, like you said, you know, you get the nail polish. Why is it like that? It fermented hot, or it got out of control. You know, your fermentation wasn't under control, so now you have a bunch of, you know, nail polish smells, or like with sizers, you know, you get the rotten egg smell. Well, why does it smell like that? Oh, well, sizers tend to ferment fast and throw off a lot of hydrogen sulfide. Oh, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. So you learn how to control that. And that in the end, in my opinion, leads to being a better brewer.
Yeah, no, there is an understanding that you can get through just pulling stuff apart like that, that I think is 100% a great instinct. I like that answer a lot. Carlos, thank you so much for joining me tonight in this interview. I'm kind of notioning to put together like a group of homebrewers that kind of we bring back in on a semi-regular basis, maybe every 3-4 months. Chat with them, see where they're at, what they're working on, things like that. Would you be interested in joining that group with us?
Yeah, I'm always down. I'm always happy Perfect. To talk shop and happy to talk. I'll talk to a random person on the street about me.
Well, and I know I've seen you active on the Mead communities on Facebook quite a bit as well. So that is no surprise there either. Thank you for hanging out with me tonight. I really appreciate it. And we'll be in touch as far as figuring out another time to sit down and see what you've been doing in the last little while. And hey, for you guys listening at home, thank you guys for listening to the show. Feel free to reach out to me at our Facebook page, our subreddit, or info@themeadhouse.com. And geez, until next time, guys, have a good night.